You have tuned in to an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. It's Cascadia News Now, your news show that's covering everything not national, because we don't want you to forget that there's a lot of things going on that are not national. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and joining me tonight, Cascadia News Now's brand new correspondent and community citizen at large, Liz Darrow.
Hello.
Welcome, Liz.
Thank you.
And Tim Johnson, editor of the Cascadia Weasley. You knew I couldn't help it. So I got to ask you, we have a lot to cover, we're going to talk about the No Dapl Freeway March. We're going to talk about the Worker and Immigrant Solidarity March. We're going to talk about Sanctuary City coming up. But I did want to ask, what was your first thought when somebody described you as being the editor of the Cascadia Weasley?
Oh, I don't mind. It doesn't, you know, I live in the sphere of public opinion, and public opinion is my life, I suppose. And so, it doesn't bother me a bit.
Well, the newspaper does not have a mascot, and a weasel might be cute in a city of hamsters, is all I'm saying. All right, well, we have a lot to get to, but I do want to start off with the U.S. Appeals Court upholding the suspension of the travel ban, because that is really a Washington State story. And Tim, I know you have some stuff to say about it, but I'm just going to try to give a very brief background on what happened. So the U.S. Appeals Court, our Ninth Circuit, gave a unanimous vote upholding the suspension of the travel ban, which came from a federal executive order that banned refugees from 7 Muslim countries, supposedly temporarily, except for Syria, which is indefinitely, and where an inordinate amount of refugees are, and homeless and living in horrible conditions. I thought I'd throw that in there. Our Washington State Attorney General, Bob Ferguson, sued the feds and Homeland Security. The Seattle's U.S. District Judge, James Robart, issued a temporary travel ban, saying that the federal administration's travel ban harmed individuals, businesses, and universities. The administration claimed that Robart did not have that jurisdiction, and now our Ninth Circuit has upheld the travel ban.
Correct. And it's interesting that you open the show by saying that we deal with local issues and not national. But even though Washington State is the first state that brought this forward and other states joined, it has national implications because the ban was on the executive order itself, on the implementation of the executive order. So it is a national ban that came from this action in Washington State. And essentially what happened is that an executive order was issued. Washington State stepped in and said this has damages to the state. This damages the state in material ways. They got a district court judge in Seattle to agree, and then it was immediately reviewed by three panels of judges, and they went forward and unanimously decided this. What it does is it keeps chaos from unfolding while these matters are adjudicated in court. It could have gone one way or another. Judges could have said, "Well, we'll let the executive order go back in place, and we'll reverse the ban, and we'll let it go back in place." But that would have caused a lot of chaos at airports, a lot of chaos with people with green cards and people with visas and people with travel plans. What this does is it reduces the chaos and allows a judicial process to move forward.
And you said the irony of starting with something that's national. I don't know if this is national news with local implications or regional news with national implications. The personal is political and the regional is national.
Correct.
But I am super proud of our state, and I think that everybody at the table probably agrees with me. There is a little jaded part of me that says, wow, we have a lot of tech industries. And I have to say, I wonder if our representatives in Washington are maybe emboldened because they have support from
right. Well,
tech
industries. Consider that a completely legitimate concern. The tech aspect, the aspect that the aspect that not everyone coming into this country is damaging this country by coming into it, I think, is absolutely central to the concept. And if tech companies are concerned because they have extremely qualified people that help them advance the economy of Washington State and the nation, and they have concerns about that, that's completely legitimate. And those companies wrote amicus briefs, friendly briefs to the court in support of this ban. They oppose it.
So we will continue to track this story, and with the greatest of hope that we don't have any travel bans ever again, I guess I can say. But we have a lot of issues to cover and a lot of exciting and active groups of people this week. We're going to start off by talking about the Sanctuary City movement and what happened at Monday's city council meeting. We're going to start off with Junga Subedar, who was one of the speakers, and I think she kind of sums up the sentiment of at least some of the audience.
The voices of the past are calling to you as elected officials by our community to not leave people unprotected while they face increased attacks from the White House. We have seen the exclusion of Chinese in 1882, the exclusion of Sikhs in 1907, the internment of Japanese during World War II, and the continued bias and discrimination against Coast Salish people. You have the incredible opportunity right now to change this legacy of exclusion and racism in our local history. I care deeply for Bellingham. It's my home. And I want to make Bellingham as great as we all claim it to be. I want to remember our city as being on the side, not on the side of fear and bigotry. If we can prove to meet the challenge in these militarized, dangerous times of arbitrary use of power and protect our undocumented and immigrant community members, we may be able to start reconciling the wrongs from our racist past and start to heal our community together and truly start building one inclusive community. Our community is under attack, so much more than ever before. And the city and local law enforcement have an obligation to protect everyone, no matter what their immigration status is.
That was Junga Subedar speaking at this Monday's overpacked and overflowing city council meeting. If only more city council meetings were that exciting and well attended. She was speaking on behalf of or along with several groups, including the Western Washington University Blue Group, which is a group of undocumented students, which sort of led this charge. As Tim has talked about before, this is not the first time Sanctuary City has been considered by our city council, and the result, as the council themselves liked to say several times at the end of the meeting, made nobody happy, and in what some of us might have felt was a little bit condescending, ended up with the same result that they did last time.
Well, I don't know that they ended up with the same. I wouldn't characterize it that way. And it's interesting because you had mentioned before about how brave Washington was in moving forward on this, and that's an important component of this, because I believe that the actions of the governor and the attorney general have created a safe space for Washington cities to consider their own approaches to federal policy. And cities are doing that, and they're doing it in different ways. Bellingham did this. I think the reason I think it's I wouldn't characterize it in the way you did was it was framed in the form of an ordinance, which means that all of these policies now become encompassed inside of Bellingham Municipal Code, and they are enforceable under that. And in fact, you can make claims, judicial claims, that the city is or is not following its own policy because now it is part of that ordinance. So I think it was a strong move. It wasn't as strong as people might have wished it to be, but I do think that they did actions that have tangible results.
But let me be clear. The city council stopped short of declaring Bellingham a sanctuary city. So in that, I'm saying it is like what happened a few years ago. And that is frustrating. I understand that there are a lot of people who were at the meeting who supposedly were from Bellingham. I don't absolutely know that they were from Bellingham. And a lot of people were talking about the supposed dangers that people who are undocumented might bring and the lawlessness that might occur. But I think a great proportion of people, I think the great majority of people, were standing up for us to be called a sanctuary city. And that isn't what happened.
Well, not only that, but there was a clear omission of what the people who drafted the ordinance were asking for. Three key things that I know of. And I just want to, since this is radio.
Let me just interrupt. When you say the people who drafted the ordinance, that did come from the Blue Group.
It came from community to community. There was collaboration with the people who these policies directly impact. And I with a clear absence of any of those people from this room, speaking as a white person, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of anyone. I'm just saying what I noticed, having been present at the town hall prior and the city hall meeting, is that there were things that they asked for specifically to feel safe and to feel protected that they were told, you can't have this, you can't have what you're asking for. So in that way, it's what was already happening. Now it's an ordinance, so I suppose it's a step in the right direction. I don't feel like an authority to say that because it doesn't directly impact me, but I absolutely felt, being at that meeting, the emotion of the room when, for someone to come forward and say, I am undocumented and this is what I need to feel safe. You know, that's absolutely brave, and I felt really disappointed for them to not even be granted a citizen oversight committee, which is a really reasonable thing that obviously could be done, and maybe the city moving forward will do that. But what I witnessed was, I'm sorry, we can't make big changes.
What were those three things that you talked about?
So they requested a citizen oversight committee of the police. They requested for the city to come out strong against racial profiling, and in some cases to be punitive to the police if they are, you know, if that does happen. And let's see, what was the third thing? Help me out here, Stephanie.
Was the ordinance, and I think it was that there was noncompliance.
Oh, you know what it was, the noncompliance
was punitive,
with ICE.
A punitive action if,
right.
if that was broken.
Well, and the other
it?
Piece was
or
that
fine if it was
they're
broken?
Asking for the city of Bellingham and the police department not to comply with ICE. In other words, not bringing ICE in to translate if they don't have, and that's something that the city of Bellingham has done, and we've had deportations from the city of Bellingham as a result. So if you get stopped in traffic, you know, if you have a routine traffic stop and then all of a sudden immigration is called in, you know, that's a violation of your safety as a person in Bellingham. So I think they were asking for a clear line to be drawn, and the council said, we can't do that.
So one of the things that happened was both citizens from the Blue Group and I think some people from community to community, I'm not sure, but they alluded to a work group that had come together that was members of the city council and representatives from different groups. And the people who were expressing concern and actually asked for this vote to be postponed on Monday were saying that they did not feel that the work group necessarily gave them enough credence or actually listened to their points, and that some people said that they felt tokenized.
Well, I guess how I would respond to that is that this is an iterative process. This was a step forward. It's not the last step in an iterative process. I did attend their discussion in the afternoon where council was discussing the merits of this, and they considered the idea of a citizens oversight panel to be important but severable from what they're up to right now, and I can go into some of the reasons for that. They considered that to be something that did not have to be included in this ordinance as it was drafted, but it could be considered at some future time, and I do believe that they are going to consider it. One of the reasons I think there's a reluctance to move forward on Citizen Oversight Committee is that there are currently 33 unfilled positions on City of Bellingham boards and commissions, so there's a reluctance to form a new board or commission with 33 absentees. I mean, this week they just closed down one. They just closed down a public works commission because it basically was not meeting and not doing anything. So there's a reluctance to expand that. And I think there's also a reluctance to have a citizens oversight that has a lot of energy and excitement for a particular view. In this case, I'm sure that if they put together a citizens oversight committee, they would have hundreds of people that would want to show up there to complain about police activity, and perhaps that's an absolutely legitimate thing to complain about. But I think that they want to have a committee that is less politicized and more focused on the ground sorts of oversight that a citizens board could provide.
And in terms of closures and vacancies of committees, I think that's something that happens every year, that there's a lack of public interest, which is certainly not the issue this time. But I might also posit that a lot of people are coming to our representatives speaking to a very real fear that might, one might think, prioritize this committee over other committees with vacancies. And when you hold that in comparison to Seattle and the statement Ed Marie said, or the mayor of Boston, who I was just last week said, we will have immigrants in our city hall and we will do everything we can to protect them. It's understandable to me that this might come across as tepid in comparison.
Well, I guess the question I would ask you, Stephanie, I'm interested in your answer. What do you think would be achieved by declaring Bellingham a sanctuary city?
Well, obviously there's a whole issue just in what that means, and that's maybe a whole show in what that means to whom. And I think Liz put it very clearly that what a sanctuary city means to different people is different things. I think right now this is a time not to pussyfoot around. I think right now, even if there are people who would find that symbolic in a anti-immigrant way or in a pro-immigrant way, and even if there are people who say, I'm really scared and I don't think that just calling us a sanctuary city is enough, I think taking that stand right now is huge in terms of us coming together as a people to say this is a priority, and if we take on this name, we are willing to risk whatever public funding we might eventually lose someday, because it's that important to protect our citizens.
You know, and honestly, I think it's less about semantics. I don't think that the people who drafted the ordinance care what we call it. You know, they were calling it Keep Bellingham Families Working, and then they said, well, you might as well not call it that, because the undocumented people who make up 18% of the economy and have no benefit from that, they're contributing to our system. They get no protection in return. So I think they're saying, you know, you can scrap our title altogether, because, and that's my understanding from talking with Rosalinda Guillen from Community to Community Development, is, you know, what this means is that we're asking for something very clearly. And, you know, these are people who understand the issues, and lawyers and college professors and farm workers all working together to say, you know, what would make us feel safe? And then to have this sort of condescending response, well, you know, we're doing these things already. We're not going to make the changes that you're asking for. I think a citizen oversight committee, I don't see how that's problematic, and I think the citizens who are affected by these issues should
I'm going to jump in on that, because I was formerly part of the Citizens Action Committee for the Citizens Advisory Council, for the Bellingham Police, for the first couple of years that it had started. And groups like the Bellingham Racial Justice Coalition had already been pushing for a Citizen Oversight Committee, and I heard Chief Cook, Bellingham Police Chief Cook, speak to his concerns. And I'm not sure that I felt about them being totally reliable, because he talked about a lot of things about confidentiality and where are the lines of confidentiality. And yet I think the other side of that argument is, oh, well, we get another sheriff's department from another county. Well, that's cronyism. And so there's some real concerns if there is an issue, if the police department has to be investigated, that there are citizens involved. And I think if the city is willing to say there are a lot of details we have to work out in order to protect confidentiality, in order to figure out where a citizen can sit in or what kind of oversight, whether or not they, you know, what kind of supervisory capacity they have, I would have been happy if they had taken a stronger step to say they were doing that.
Right. But I think you actually unpacked exactly what the issue there was, which I think Bellingham, City of Bellingham as a policy level, wanted to make an immediate response to this executive order and get things in place that are immediately responsive to that. But also in the understanding that any sort of thing that you do on police oversight is complicated. It's got a lot of complications. I don't think they wanted to delay putting this ordinance in place 6 months while there's a discussion about how to form that. And that's why I said earlier that I thought that They considered that matter severable. We're going to get this thing in place. We're going to talk about this. And there's a lot of interest from council members like April Barker and Terry Borneman who want to move forward and actually put that together. So I don't think there's a reluctance to do it. They just want to do it in a proper and good way. And just one more thing, circling back to the idea of the naming of the ordinance, I did an interview with Kelly Linville, Mayor Kelly Linville, on Friday, and she said that she had come around to the idea that if people get comfort and they get security because something is called something, then that's an important thing to do too. And so she herself was open to the idea of drafting a sanctuary city ordinance. I guess you can take that with whatever salt you want to, but that there was some pushback or some concern that maybe we shouldn't do that. And I think you would mention that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I would have liked to have heard from the mayor on Monday. I just want to say, I'm sure we'll keep talking about this because this is not over. And Liz pointed out before we got on the air that there are several Facebook groups, if you are interested, community, the Blue Western Washington University Blue Group, Bellingham Racial Justice Coalition, to find out what actions they're taking. I encourage you to get on there. One thing that I felt, I hear what you're saying, Tim. I think that there was motion. I think that there was at least the good intentions of forward motion from the city council. I think it was frustrating, especially when they sort of fell back on sex trafficking. It would have been very easy to put in a clause that said, except for cases of sex trafficking. Like, that felt a little weak sauce. And also a little bit of the tone. It was very late. They were all tired. But a little of the, we can't make everybody happy. We can't make everybody happy. It came off as a little condescending. But we're going to talk more about that. We've got a wrap up. We have more to talk about. But I do want to go out with, I think, the most powerful and effective speech from the Sanctuary City, and that was Olga Solano.
My name is Olga Solano, and I'm documented. I've lived here for almost 15 years. I'm a local resident. I want you to pass an ordinance that ends any collaboration between Bellingham Police and Immigration Enforcement. Sorry, this is my first time speaking in public. I've read the ordinance you put together, and I don't like it. And I want to remind you the recent executive order has effectively removed all priorities from immigration enforcement. It targets for arrest and removal of non-citizens simply charged with or suspected of crime without requiring a conviction. It expands despite removal, deportation without a hearing from the border region to the entire U.S. Border eroding due process. I could read this, but I just want to make I just want to talk about my personal experience with you, and I'm sorry. Well, 7 years ago, I got pulled over by the police, basically because I'm brown. And I was just teaching my sister how to drive, and the police, instead of giving me a ticket, he just called the Border Patrol and took my sisters with me, and they were like underage. And it's just painful for me to talk about this, but all I want you to understand that we're not criminals, that I'm here. I've been working here my entire life. I've been paying taxes. I contribute to your economy, and I demand respect. I'm a farm worker, and my parents are farm workers. My dad got deported for the same reasons.
Thank you,
I just want you to understand that we are human beings, and that we demand and we deserve respect.
Thank you, Olga.
Thank you.
This is the power of the people!
You are listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contouris with Liz Darrow and Tim Johnson. And that was sound from the Worker and Immigrant Solidarity March in Burlington to Mount Vernon, that just happened on Sunday. Right before that, we heard from Olga Solano bringing us out of the conversation about the city council meeting and sanctuary cities. So Liz Darrow has brought up repeatedly, and I want to give her credit, that it is basically three white people having these conversations about topics that very strongly affect immigrants and people of color and Native Americans this week. And that's frustrating. And so one thing that we're trying to do is play as much audio from these events that we can. The other thing that I want to say is, I think in the case of the people who were involved in the No Dapple protest, I think there might be some counsel to lay low right now, and I totally respect that. I think in terms of the Immigrant Solidarity March and also in terms of Sanctuary City, there are a lot of people down in Olympia fighting a couple of bills that are attacking workers this week. And so we send our thoughts and support to people who are doing very important work. So, Liz, you were at the march on Sunday, and I heard there was a few hundred people.
Yeah, some maybe over 400 people. You know, the numbers are always speculative, I think. But it's an annual event. The farm workers that are in the Skagit Valley, you know, it's representative from Burlington to Mount Vernon is about 7 miles. And, you know, Skagit Valley is just basically a vast farm expanse of farms, right? So these are people who provide food for the area. They work very hard. And the event typically is a celebration. We have one in Bellingham too, the first Sunday of May. That is it's a March for Dignity. It's a celebration of the people who provide our food and an opportunity to walk alongside them.
So so this is an annual march.
Yeah.
And so have you been before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we typically go to the one in Whatcom County starts out the guide in Linden and ends up at the Maritime Heritage Park. And it's very family friendly. We have kids. So, you know, we usually join in for the last stretch of it. And the Maritime celebration is food and music. It's an opportunity to show the gratitude that we obviously should be showing for the people who are providing food to us in this community. But I had not been to the Skagit Valley March before.
So it would be kind of doofy to say what's different about this year, but I'm curious to know what it felt like and how different it felt.
Well, for me, I hadn't been to a march as a correspondent for KMRE before, so that was new for me. And I was very aware that there were people who just did not want to talk to a white girl with a microphone, and I have absolute respect for that. A lot of people were happy to say why they were there, why they were supporting. Other people just don't want to say their name in the media at all. So what's different There's just a lot that's different this year in terms of people who are supporting, who haven't supported before, who may have never even thought of these issues before. So there's a visibility piece. And the march itself, with so many hundreds of people going that 7 mile stretch over two bridges, that's part of the purpose, is to be out in public and say, you know, we're here and we're not going away. And then to have, you know, the white folks in the community also join in and say, absolutely, we support you, we're here for you. So that's a piece that hasn't been as strong, I wouldn't say, in years past.
Absolutely. I want to let you know it is about 6 o'clock. You are tuned into Cascadia News Now with Stephanie Contouris, Liz Darrow, and Tim Johnson. And you are listening to KMRE FM, 102.3 FM Bellingham. If you are tuning in now to hear Elected Connections or North Fork Law, that we are going to be going a little bit long tonight because there is a lot of local news that is pretty urgent to cover, and we will be rejoining our local programming at 6:30. Again, this is Cascadia News Now, and it is 6 o'clock. Well, because we want to support the voices and the people of color and immigrants who are leading marches, and we want to give power to that, we're going to go to a couple of pieces. We're going to listen to first Edgar Franks, who is from Familias por la Justicia and Community to Community, and he's going to give a speech. And then following that, Liz did have a couple people talk to that white girl. And so we're going to go into some interviews right after that.
This is a great showing from everybody. On just a couple weeks' notice, we were able to gather a couple of hundred people to keep this movement going. So esta es un gran, una gran señal cuando en unas cuantas semanas podemos organizar tantas personas. También quería decir que en este momento, in this moment that we're fighting and we're organizing, there's so many different causes. Hay muchas causas que están luchando. The important thing is that not one of those movements or one of those fights is isolated. La cosa importante es de recordar que nunca de estas luchas no es aislada. We've been struggling, you know, when I was growing up here, my family moved here in 79 or in 1980 from Texas to work the fields here. Mi familia se movió aquí en los 80s para trabajar en los campos en los 80s. Queremos, y a través de ese tiempo hemos organizado marchas por más de 25 años aquí localmente. And for all those years, for over 25, almost 30 years, we've been organizing farm worker marches here locally at the local level. For me, the biggest hope was that one day there'd be a farm worker union here in Skagit County, like the United Farm Workers. Mi esperanza siempre era que siempre saliera una unión, un sindicato, que se formara como la similar a la de César Chávez, los campesinos unidos. Y fortunadamente ya tenemos aquí a esa unión. And fortunately, that union is already here. It's Familias Unidas por la Justicia. Es Familias Unidas por la Justicia, esa unión. Y a través de estos 3 años que hemos estado luchando lado a lado, and for these last 3 years that they've been organizing, fighting, we've been fighting side by side, they've been taking on the biggest corporations in the state and in the country. And por todos estos 3 años que Familias Unidas ha estado organizando, ha estado luchando contra los rancheros más poderosos y las compañías más poderosas de todo el país. Y no nomás han luchado, han ganado. So they've also not just been fighting, but they've been beating these corporations and these farmers. So for them, that's why it's important that we show up here in solidarity. Por eso es importante que salgamos aquí en solidaridad, pero a la misma vez seguir el liderazgo de los que van a estar más afectados, a que han estado afectados por pólizas malas. So, it's important for us to follow the work, the people that have been putting in the work, that have been on the front lines, that are going to be, that not only are going to be, that are affected by bad policies, but have been by bad policies. So, for 3 years, they've been mobilizing, organizing. They created a network all around the United States that's powerful, and this is a sign. So for us as local in Skagit, it's important us to follow their leadership. So when they say they want a sanctuary city, it's our job to make that happen. Yeah. So cuando Familias Unidas ya organizó por 3 años alrededor del estado y de todo el país. Y cuando ellos dicen que quieren una ciudad santuaria, necesitamos que seguir su liderazgo y hacerlo una realidad.
My name is Aide Lavariega, and I am coming from Seattle to support the farm workers in Burlington. And the march was organized by Familias Unidas por la Justicia, who have organized and resisted against violations to their rights as workers. And now they are supporting in solidarity with everything that is happening around the country.
My name is Enrique Lopez, from Skagit County. And we're here supporting the local farm workers from Whatcom and Skagit. They do a lot of hard work out in the fields, rain, shine, or snow. So we're here out here supporting our local farm workers, but also bringing the message that that we need to unify and support each other.
Pues yo estoy, yo vine a marchar porque no me gusta que estén separando familias.
So I came to march because I don't like that families are being separated.
Pienso que el señor presidente lo único que está haciendo es causándoles un problema psicológico a los niños porque solo están pensando que se van a ir sus papás.
So I think that Mr. President is creating a big psychological problems or psychological trauma to kids because they are only thinking about what's happened to the parents. And the reason I'm marching today is against separation of families.
Y por eso ando apoyando la marcha porque pues tengo nietos aquí, tengo familia aquí. Y pienso que pues, se van a están pensando nada más que sus papás se van a ir y se van a quedar solo.
And the reason I'm marching here today is because I have children and grandchildren in here, and I feel like they're only thinking about their parents being deported and that they're going to be here and stay alone.
And you were listening to some interviews from the Worker and Immigrant Solidarity March that happened on Sunday in Burlington all the way to Mount Vernon. That was Ivela Riega, Enrique, and Maria, and they were speaking after a speech from Edgar Franks. You're listening to KMRE 102.3 Bellingham, and this is Cascadia News Now. Now we're going to turn to maybe not the biggest news, but maybe the most ongoing news of the past week and the most ongoing discussion. We're going to talk about what happened on the freeway on the 11th, on Saturday the 11th. And I am going to just let you know I was there as a reporter. I got some audio, but I feel like I was there as a participant as well. And we have briefly made reference to me being labeled a citizen journalist in the city of Bellingham recently. And I've been spending, not to make this all about me, but I've been spending some time thinking about what that means. And I think for me, that means, yes, you can participate in events and report them. And I think as an aside to that, I would like to say there are so many voices, so many protests going on right now. Seriously, if you want to be part of this, if you want to bring other voices to the radio, please reach out to us on Facebook, Cascadia News Now. Consider being a citizen journalist yourself. That being said, I want to point out once again, this is three white people sitting here, and we are sitting on, some might say, occupied land, Salish land, having a conversation about Native people standing up for Native people. And this is at the heart of the Dakota Pipeline protest. I think rather than set the scene anymore, I am going to go to a cut. This is Michael Vindiola. And what he is reading is a statement from the Senate and the House and Senate committees. He's reading a statement at the No Dapple protest himself.
As members of the United States Senate and House Natural Resources Committees, we write to express our deep concern regarding the announcement made today by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that it intends to issue the final easement under Lake Oahe for the Dakota Access Pipeline. This decision was made without appropriate tribal consultation, a full environmental review, or sufficient due process. This blatant disregard for federal law and our country's treaty and trust responsibilities to Native American tribes is unacceptable. We strongly oppose this decision and any efforts to undermine tribal rights. A number of us have repeatedly expressed our concerns with the tribal consultation and permitting process and have called for meaningful consultation with tribes and a substantive review of the environmental and social impacts as well as potential alternatives. The arbitrary and capricious decision to grant the easement now ignores the rights of tribal governments who have expressed concerns over the process to date. Granting this easement without meaningful tribal consultation nor proper review of environmental impacts is unlawful and morally unacceptable.
Woo! Woo!
That's right.
In addition, it has been the policy of the Corps to wait at least 14 days before notifying Congress of its intent to grant an easement of this nature and actually doing so. This decision violates that policy and circumvents appropriate congressional review. The United States has both a legal and moral responsibility to uphold its tribal treaty and trust responsibilities. This announcement demonstrates a total disregard for tribal rights, the rule of the law, separation of powers, and transparency. We urge you to immediately reverse this decision and follow the appropriate procedures required for tribal consultation, environmental law, and due process.
This was Michael Vindiola speaking at the No Dapple protest that ended up shutting down part of the freeway over by Lakeway and was out there for about an hour. So maybe it would be good for us to think about the context of this protest. Before we get into the protest itself and how people have been feeling about it, this has been about 7 months, I think, that the Sioux people have been fighting. And what happened was there was progression in terms of the development of the pipeline. And then at the end of the Obama administration, he had the Army Corps of Engineers made a decision that they would have an environmental impact statement that was suddenly reversed and the development happened again. And so part of what we just heard was talking about the respect for the treaty lands and the respect for the process that has not been honored. That being said, there has been a lot of ire at the freeway being shut down, and I don't know how else to put it. I'm just going to say what looks to me like a lot of white hand-wringing about how this wasn't a peaceful protest and how this wasn't a well-behaved protest. And I think part of Bellingham is a little bit shocked because Bellingham is used to being very well-behaved.
Right. And I guess the comment I would make about it is, first of all, I love direct democracy. I love the First Amendment in action. Civil disobedience. We don't teach it in school. We should teach it in school. And one of the reasons I think we should teach it in school is because I think some civil disobedience is more effective than other civil disobedience. And I think there's a sort of a codification of what makes effective civil disobedience. And when you stray from those rules, your civil disobedience becomes perhaps less effective or has unintended consequences.
I would disagree with that, actually. I mean, I appreciate your perspective, but I think that disruption is a strategy. And, you know, it's not as if these people just got together on Saturday morning and said, hey, let's shut down the freeway. You know, this is a group of people who has been working a very long time. And I also think we need to look at who are the organizers of this protest. And unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation about that. I've heard from people, well, it's just a bunch of white privilege out there shutting down the freeway. And that's actually not the case. These are Native Americans working with community to community development. They get to decide. I mean, I feel like my role is just as a support person. Just tell me where to stand or tell me to get out of the way. I think it's really frustrating to hear from people, you know, well, this isn't the way to do it. Why don't you stand on the sidewalk with your sign? You know, why don't you be safe? You know, it's like, that isn't working. So I fully support, and, you know, maybe it is unsafe. And maybe part of the thing is that the historical significance of a freeway is that it separates people from each other, right? So you can drive from one end of the city to the other without having to confront the city at all. So I think disrupting that is a statement in and of itself. And I also think that people are uncomfortable with that. I think that's very important. And the conversations that result from that are very important. But most importantly, it's not for us to say, this is how you get to protest. You know, that defeats the purpose. I think disruption at this point absolutely makes sense. I totally support it.
Well, and let's talk about the people who are the well-meaning, I support no DAPL, but, because, I mean, there's a whole lot of extremes out there on both sides, and I'll get to it, because I've seen some pretty horrific reactions since Saturday. But the well-meaning people, well, I would have supported no DAPL, or I used to support no DAPL, but you're not making any friends, and you haven't done well for your cause. And look at how many people would have had to support you or would have supported you, but now they don't support you. I think, Liz, the point that you make about how long this has been happening and where we are, I try to give a little bit of a picture of that, where the we are now, it is huge. And when people talk about illegalities and people should be fined and people should be jailed and this and this and this and this, the illegalities, many people feel quite strongly, are happening in terms of treaty violations and are happening in terms of people who protest civilly. And as a matter of fact, somebody in my own family said, well, it would be fine if they were disruptive over there. Like, okay, that right there, that one comment to me gave more credence to the argument for stopping a freeway than anything else anybody could have said.
Well, look, Stephanie, I mean, I may be a white guy, but I've got friends who are members of Lummi Nation. Some of them are leaders in Lummi Nation. I talked to them about what was going on, and they expressed some shock and dismay. Their immediate thought was that this was sort of a false flag event that was put forward by the oil corporations or somebody else to try to put their issues in a bad light. And of course, that sounds very paranoid for them to think that. I think they have legitimate reasons for being paranoid about those sorts of issues. But when your allies think that you might be the enemy, you might want to rethink your strategy about how this was put together, because, and I'm not speaking for any official position at Lummi Nation. I'm not speaking for any individual there, but I did speak to them, and they were concerned. They thought that this actually put their battle in an improper light.
And I don't tend to hear that, Tim, when white people are disruptive to other white people. And this is a huge, and this came up in your own Facebook conversation. Other people brought this issue up that, oh, the Lummi authorities weren't checked in with, and the Lummi authorities didn't sanction this. But when people shut down U.S. Bank asking for us to divest, nobody said, well, Kelly Linville didn't approve that. The leaders of the white community didn't approve that. So I find that that is a false comparison. I don't think that that's fair to people who are feeling very passionate, who are involved in a group who has been fighting DAPL for months.
Well, I don't actually see how your comment was responsive to what I said. I mean, there were people that were upset with the U.S. Bank protest when it resulted in the breaking of a window. And as I said, you know, the penultimate expression, I think, of civil rights and civil disobedience was Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks. They put themselves out there. They created a disruption. They did it, but within that was the sense that they were in the right. They were correct. They were proper and correct for what they were doing. And I think that I'm not suggesting that it was improper or anything like that. I support people gathering and protesting, but I do think that there are ways of making it more effective, because ultimately, what a civil disobedience demonstration is about. Maybe we don't want to think about it this way, but really it is a public relations effort to get the public on your side and to say, wait a minute, those folks are right. They're right. And I'm going to write my congressman today and I'm going to tell them that they're right. So people can demonstrate any way they want to. I'm not saying that. That's not my position. But I do think that there are effective ways. For example, if you shut down a railroad, you're only affecting the one thing. You're only affecting the one train, but you are creating an economic disturbance. You're making a statement, and it's a profound and powerful statement, but it only affects wealth and power and corporate activity. It doesn't prevent somebody, you know, maybe who was in labor and trying to get to the hospital from getting to the hospital.
A couple of things, Tim. I think I hear what you're saying. And, you know, the same group of people did shut down a railroad a couple of months ago for several hours. I think there's a frustration that I'm hearing from my friends in the community that these things aren't working. You know, you have to turn up the volume. When you have an absolute catastrophe going on nationally and then locally to pair all those things together. And of course, you know, you're going to have people who are in the Lummi Nation who have all kinds of different thoughts and feelings. I mean, that's ridiculous to think that every person would agree with
Correct.
What's going on. But I mean, I personally think sometimes you have to break a window, and that's not, breaking a window is not violence. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
We could get upset that, oh, this might be getting out of control. You know, it's out of control. It's been out of control for a long time. And how very frustrating to have people say, well, maybe you shouldn't create such a, how is this, you know, helping or you know, this isn't really getting you anywhere. So I think that's all BS. I think that's.
Yeah. And let's be clear, whether or not this was a disruptive, and it was it disrupted business as usual in Bellingham. Let's be very clear that this was a non-violent protest. Let's not confuse it with a violent protest, because it wasn't. People were very, very peaceful. We can get into some of the results of what happened on that protest in a minute, but I want to go to Michelle Vindiola, and this is the speech she gave when she was calling us to action.
Trump has passed his executive memorandum to approve drilling on the site near the Missouri River that will desecrate tribal land and the burial sites of the tribal people who live there, of the Standing Rock Sioux Nation. And they have been working on this issue, struggling over this, fighting for this for the last 7 months. And they have asked water protectors to stand with them. We all have things that are impacting us, that are intersecting with women's issues, women's reproductive rights, with Muslims, with other immigrants, with the border walls, with religious freedom, and tribal sovereignty, not to mention the environmental degradation. So today we're going to escalate the action and show this nation that our city will stand against any tyranny that this country's government is pushing against us. So the Standing Rock Sioux Nation and the water protectors have called for an increased escalation of action to draw attention to these issues. So what I'm going to tell you now is that we're going to do something that may not make you feel very comfortable. And you don't have to do it, because there are multiple ways to participate. And there are two places to stand: on the sidewalk with your signs, or moving up to the freeway to block the traffic. There's no reason to go up there if you're not willing or ready. We want to make a statement as people here in Bellingham that we stand against what is happening to our people.
Michelle Vindiola speaking at the No Dapple Freeway protest on Cascadia News Now. We have just a couple minutes left, but I think it's really important for us to talk about that we and the public may have had a very different conversation about what happened at the DAPL protest had not, 4 miles down the road, a car had not gotten into an accident with another car.
Right. And I guess here's my thoughts on this, because I've given probably more thought to this than anything else. But and I have something to say about it, so forgive me if I go on a little bit. But, you know, to those listening, and keep one hand, and if you're in a car, keep your hand on the steering wheel. But everybody raise your hand if you've ever been stopped in traffic, if you've ever come from behind on a traffic jam on the freeway. I mean, one of the things that is going on in this narrative is that the protest is responsible for this accident. And I want to say that that disrupts the more important narrative that the driver of the vehicle is very responsible for the conditions of the road around them, the speed at which they're traveling, how close they're traveling to something. So I think one of the things that we get lost on is there was a disruption on the freeway. It did stop traffic. 4 miles down the road, there was an accident. But the driver of the vehicle and those around them have some responsibility for this. And we can't just lay it all on the fact that there was civil disobedience occurring.
Not to mention that it has been a great opportunity for a lot of racism and hate targeting of the protesters. Having been there, I can tell you that they had a whole fleet of volunteer peacekeepers, including people driving their own cars on the freeway to slow people down safely. They would not let us on the road until it was safe. As you just heard Michelle Vendiola say, if you were not comfortable with this action, you could stand on street corner, and many people did. But as far as my eye could see, there was nothing but peacekeepers and safe stuff. So whether or not people think that's ignorance, look, trees fall on the road. It's freaking Chuckanut. Rocks fall down Chuckanut. So stop blaming this protest and stop blaming the protesters for this action.
I have one other thing to add to that, though, and I'd like to go on with it, which is, and we've talked about this, but we have a lot of love in this country for the Second Amendment. I would like to see some love for the First Amendment, because, you know, there is a lot of, and we're on a public radio station, there's a lot of malarkey, and there's a lot of nonsense about the Second Amendment, and we put up with a lot. People die because we have this commitment to the Second Amendment. I would like to see us have some commitment to the First Amendment and not run around passing laws that people should be run over if they're protesting, or they should be prosecuted if they're protesting. I mean, if we can put up with deaths for the Second Amendment, we should be able to put up with inconvenience for the First Amendment.
Absolutely. And there's so much more that we want to say about this, and we are unfortunately running out of time. I do want to give huge, huge thanks to my co-host Tim Johnson and Liz Darrow, who is also my new correspondent. Our co-correspondents this week were Liz Darrow and Brooks Collins, our engineer and technical director, Dave Willingham. Thank you, Dave. And I am your producer. I do want to say, if you want to be a citizen journalist, contact us at Cascadia News Now on Facebook or 499-6749. We are going to go up with Stand Up, Stand and Rock by Hip Hop Caucus, Taboo, Tony Duncan, Perry Cheevers, and Shailene Woodley, who was arrested at Standing Rock. This is Cascadia News Now.
They call it a pipeline, but those on the front lines know that black snake was sent for us to grow, to shed the skin our ancestors pray of wounds old and calloused, so that we may stay, so that we may unite, unity our tool. No weapons are found in this court of rule. Men becoming ki'ai, steadfast in their guard, protecting women's hearts as their song become roots, roots to cast out healing for all sentient beings, to honor sacred mother, heart forward we heal. The salmon will run, the mauna will breathe, the rivers will flow. The rainbow is here, and prophecy tells us all generations will hear.
Nations and our people that have been living here for thousands of years.
Stand up.
We've been fighting for our freedom since the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria.
Stand up.
Like Geronimo, Sitting Bull, Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, Lennon Peltier.
Stand up.
Now they poisoning the waters for our sons and our daughters, so we on the frontier.
We won.
One nation, one cause, one people, one tribe. Now it's us against the pipeline.
Get on your feet for Standing Rock, and we'll show you how strong we could be when we unify.
To all my native people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my tribal people, recognize yourself, keep your head up. To all my native people, to all the original people, to all my indigenous people, recognize yourself, keep your head up.
Stand up, stand up, stand up, stand up. Stand up, stand up, stand up. Stand up, stand up, stand up. Stand up, stand up.
From the beginning we was winning this game on planet Earth. It's been spinning, we've been living and dying, but giving birth the first of many nations, celebrating them days when all that got made came after what God made. These days we cater to these internet memes, internet streams, it seems them streams aren't clean. We need the whole story seen, we're hassling before water has gasoline.